Ireland Talks podcast with Kevin Byrne.
Hello, and you're very welcome to another edition of the podcast. Joining me on the podcast this time round, a singer, songwriter, and musician who's played with the Furies, Ronnie Drew, and Liam Clancy, to name but a few. I'm delighted to be joined by Francie Conway. I began by asking Francie what life was like growing up in Tralee and how he found himself involved in the music business.
My parents had a pub in Tralee, which was actually the first pub in Tralee to have live music. So I was listening to music, and I kind of picked up playing guitar at a very young age. And when I was 6 years of age, I used to get up on the little stage, the little podium in the bar, with short pants, and I used to sing Chuck Berry's rock and roll music.
Hey,
just let me hear some of that rock and roll music.
And that's where you got the love for music. Was there music in the family?
Well, no. I mean, it was just more like growing up in that environment, and kind of I never took it kind of as anything more. I always took it for granted, and that it was natural to be able to play, you know?
Yeah.
And it was something I never even thought about. And then when I was 12 years of age, I was at the local youth club, and there used to be groups coming to play. And I remember the first group I saw there was with Skid Row, with Gary Moore, Brush Shields, and Noel Bridgman.
Yeah.
And then the next group I saw was Thin Lizzy. They used to come every 2 weeks. And I can still remember very clearly Philip saying, "This is a song that I wrote myself called Look What the Wind Just Blew In." And I can still remember where I was standing in the CYMS hall in Tralee. And I was absolutely transfixed, because it just blew my whole system that I was actually in a room with somebody that has written a song, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, most people today will know people who've written songs. They will know, you know, that who the songs are written by. And it's like, you know, it's not such a shock to the system that somebody could actually write a song. But I will never forget Philip saying that. And it was like, and then I think I started thinking, well, I mean, that guy's from Crumlin, he can do it. Maybe a guy from Tralee can write songs. And I mean, there was nobody in no artist in Kerry writing, no groups playing original material or anything. And then with two of my best friends, Liam Hartnett and Casbo Callahan, we started a band called Clutch, which was the first band in Kerry playing original material. And that was really our first gig, was supporting Planxty.
Incredible.
And it was magic, because I mean, the crowd wouldn't leave us. It was in the Ash Memorial Hall in Tralee. The crowd wouldn't leave us to leave the stage. I think it was actually more than just the band were good, but it meant more to people in the audience that they now had a band of their own that was being creative, and that was had the guts to go out there and, you know, and not play covers, not be like anybody else, you know.
Where do you think you got your writing inspiration from?
Well, I think, I mean, you know, there is a theory that there is, you know, there is no such thing as a born songwriter, that songwriters evolve, you know, and I would agree with that, in the sense that, you know, that kind of, I suppose, that quest and that curiosity of where the music comes from. And I remember, like, you know, my first album ever buying was The Beatles' Abbey Road, which was like, you know, I mean, holy God, I mean, it was just way beyond anything anybody had heard, you know. And then the next album I bought was a double compilation album on CBS Records called fill your head with rock. And that album, you know, had artists like Santana, Blood, Sweat and Tears, Leonard Cohen, and most importantly, my favorite act on the entire album was a band called Argent, with a song called Hold Your Head Up. That wasn't on the album. I discovered that after. But I just fell in love with the band. And I mean, what were the chances? You know, they say you should never meet your heroes. I have ended up, you know, surprisingly enough, Kevin, I've actually ended up playing with most of mine through my life, be it the musicians abroad and the musicians in Ireland. It's quite, you know, it's quite amazing, really.
And at that time, you probably never would have dreamt of it. You know, back.
Well, I mean, it would be beyond comprehension think that I would be in a studio with Chris White and Russ Ballard and these guys, you know, I mean, and Tim Rennick from Pink Floyd. I mean, it was way beyond comprehension, you know, I mean, you know, it was, and, you know, dreams, you know, are never that far out. They're not that so way out that you could even imagine that, you know.
Yeah. So from Tralee, you headed off to Amsterdam at the age of 18. And I was reading, I was reading that one of your busking partners was Alistair Campbell, the former British Prime Minister Tony Blair's Director of Communications and Strategy.
That's right. It's really funny because Mona and Rory and I, last weekend, I think it was Sunday night. After all the rugby and stuff finished, we put on the Queen. You know, it wasn't our Queen now, the band, it was the other Queen in Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, the story about Lady Di and the royal family and Tony Blair. And suddenly it felt really strange. There was a guy playing Alistair Campbell in the movie, you know. Yeah. And it was mad, like, kind of, and he had the gimp, he had the, you know, it was really amazing, you know.
And like, how long did you spend with Alistair in Amsterdam and busking, and did he have any views on Ireland at the time, and or was he just a guy that was just wanted to have fun and that was it?
Well, I mean, Alistair was always very, he was very politically opinionated, you know. I mean, his heart was very much in the labour movement, you know. His heart was very much in the equality of people. And, you know, and the thing was that, I mean, we hit it off. I mean, okay, we were, you know, we were good at busking because, I mean, we were busking together in Brussels and, you know, you had people out in the streets kind of when they were doing, like you'd see in Grafton Street and places, and people would do a couple of hours. And I mean, when I met Alistair and he was saying, like, that's kind of hard work, he said, like, I've got a couple of ideas, you know. So Alistair, we would sit down and he would take out the newspaper and he would say, okay, I got a funny feeling, Francie, there's going to be a lot of people at this movie tonight here in Brussels, so let's go there and we'll bust the queue.
Yeah.
So basically, Alistair would take, he'd have the kilt on, the Scottish outfit, he'd take out the bagpipes, and I don't know whether they were paying, trying to get away from us or not, but suddenly I'd go along and we'd collect the money. And then on the way back to our office, that was the Double Diamond pub in Brussels, we had a couple of different restaurants that we would stop into. And then I would do three songs and then Alistair would collect. And then they would always ask me to do one more. So then we would do four songs. So now we might have done two cinema cues. We might have done three cinema cues. By the time we got back to the office, we would have maybe done three cafes. And of course we might have a beer in each one, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the maximum we would be out might be like an hour and a quarter, an hour and a half. And the thing is, like, we would get somewhere quiet and we would divvy out the money, and kind of there isn't a hope. If you've been out in the square in Brussels all day long, you couldn't make that kind of money. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you remain friends with him to this day?
Yeah, yeah. We kind of, it was kind of, I suppose my first time realizing, because we lost contact, you know, the way with people, we lose contact with people. And when Rory was unwell and he was in Sandymount, wasn't it? In Abel Ireland, Sandymount. And he started going for short sessions. So I remember I used to go down to Brown's Cafe and it for the 2 hour session rather than going home and coming back again. And I'd go through all the papers there. So they had all the English papers. And I remember one day just opening the Times. And there was a double page feature, center double page feature, and a photograph of Alistair. And I just went, oh my God, what happened to Alistair? And next thing, I started reading on about his connection with Tony Blair and his connection with the election and et cetera. And suddenly I was going, oh my God.
Yeah.
So it was like, and then I dropped him a line because we always kind of left, in the old days, you leave contact with people. They were usually family contacts. Like I'd always leave my mom and Kerry kind of thing. And Alistair was over with Tony Blair around the time of the Good Friday Agreement. And I honestly believe that Alistair was very much a huge part in getting a British Prime Minister to be open enough to come to the island and to talk with us.
Yeah.
And to be open to such an arrangement. I don't think it would have happened with a Tory leader.
No.
It certainly wouldn't have happened with Margaret Thatcher or Theresa May. And I believe that Alistair was very much to the fore of that. And I remember, I started when he used to be waiting at the hotels for a taxi to bring him to the airport. He always tried to make sure he was back home on Saturdays to bring his son to soccer games. And while he was waiting for the taxi, I would get a phone call, but it could be 7 o'clock in the morning. Hey, Francie, what's happening? How you doing? You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I didn't have to ask him much about what he was doing because all I had to get was the paper that day and I'd find out everything what they were doing here.
Yeah. And still there, a big voice in terms of politics and today's politics.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. And he's very opinionated and
a huge critic of Boris.
He is, and he's very well respected as well, which is wonderful. You know?
So listen, Francie, while in Amsterdam, you got married there in 1986, came back to Dublin, settled, I think, in Rathfarnham, is it?
Yeah, Rathfarnham is where I live. I came back, in when our daughter was born, Emily.
Yeah.
And we kind of, it was at that stage, we didn't want to be, you know, so it was either going to be go to Sweden where Mona's from, or come to Ireland where I'm from, because we didn't really want to be the foreigners living in the country anymore, you know, when Emily was born. So we just said, let's go to Ireland. And we came to Dublin and, you know, we didn't, you know, I'd only been to Dublin for matches and for gigs when Clutch used to play.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to be coming to Dublin and I'd always stop off in Dublin for a couple of days. But I mean, it was staying in town, but I didn't really know Dublin that well. And one of our neighbours here is Keith Donald from the band Moving Hearts. I don't know if you remember Moving Hearts.
Of course, yeah.
And Keith suggested that it's actually his birthday today. I was up with him earlier on.
Happy birthday, Keith.
Keith suggested, why not take a look at Rathfarnham? And we ended up coming here, renting a house, and then we ended up buying here. And we're very happy here.
Brilliant. And of course, you mentioned Emily there, and there's Nils, and there's, of course, Rory, who's with you there. And
he's the main man. He's beside me here.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Rory. Rory, of course, is the main man. Rory got unwell, as you touched on, just a while back. And that was a difficult time, of course, for everybody, particularly yourself and the family. But there's a great story about Rory and how music, basically Rory was in a coma, and the spirit of music, you could say, took him out of it.
There is no doubt about it. Before, what was your favourite song?
We Will Rock You.
We Will Rock You.
Freddie Mercury, yeah. Songs.
And
Jesus, that's very good.
I mean, he used to drive us stone mad with the, you know, with playing that. Well, not me, I think, you know, the rest of the gang.
Jesus.
Maybe 10 times a day.
Not me.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Rory went into the coma, when he was in a coma, they say that people in a coma can hear what's going on. They know what's going on. And, you know, I put two little speakers and I brought albums that he would be familiar with at home that we would have been playing. So as to kind of let him know that if there is a way that he's not, you know, and we were in long time into the coma and there was no response. And then one day I put on We Will Rock You and his face changed a little bit. I called the head neurologist in Temple Street. She got quite annoyed with me saying that, you know, we've told you that there is very little hope. And I said, we definitely have contact. So it took her a couple of days before getting to Beaumont. And then they arrived in with the team and I said, pick whatever music you want to listen to. And she was a bit annoyed again, this again. And then I put on We Will Rock You. And at this stage, his face he was responding even more. Suddenly they pushed me aside. And now it was game on. They knew we had contact. And it was the start of us getting our little boy back, which was quite amazing, you know.
Extraordinary, yeah.
And of course, there's the connection between the band and us anyway, you know. So,
yeah.
The summer after, I mean, we got home from the hospital around just before Christmas. And then the following summer, Dom Torsch from Relief Studio in Switzerland offered us the use of his neighbors were leaving. He said, why not come with the whole family, take a break after what you've been through? And so we took them up on the offer. So the whole family flew to Geneva and then he was collecting us. So on the morning before we left, Mona cut some lovely flowers from the garden. We hid them so as to get them through customs. And on our way to Dom, to studio just outside of Freiburg, we stopped off in Montreux and we put flowers on Freddie's statue for thanking him for We Will Rock You. And then, as I said, sometimes about playing with your heroes. And a couple of years later, you know, Rory was sitting in Queen's studio in Montreux with the producer of Queen. Mm. So, you know, I mean, and work that one out.
That is incredible.
And, you know, I mean, they say there are no coincidences, that life is a part synchronicity, you know, and try and work that one out, Kevin, you know.
Incredible, really incredible story. And it's great not a bothering him there now and loving the music. He's, of course, a massive music fan.
Well, I mean, I think he's been to more studios than most professionals in Ireland, you know. You know, he's been to studios all over the place, you know.
And Francie, of course, you know, we know so much about your rock music and, you know, you mentioned Clutch and The Works and so on. But I want to talk to you about the people you've played with, and there are numerous people that you've played with. Finbar Fury, Ronnie Drew, Christy Dignam. A great story that you played at Liam Clancy's very last gig. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. That was a very special day, actually, because Finbar and I had gone to a hospital to play for a friend of Christy Dignam's dad who was unwell. It was actually in a hospice.
Yeah.
And we came back to Rathfarnham, and Finbar lives very close to me, as well as like having played together and toured together and recorded together. We're very close friends. And And then we got a message that Liam Clancy had been in the concert hall for two nights, but on the first night he got very unwell, and they asked to know, would we go in and join him and to get through the concert, you know, not knowing how well he'd be and stuff. So Danu, a traditional band, that I think Liam was related to some, they're from the Dungarvan, Carrigan Shore area, they came to play, and John Sheehan came, John from the Dubliners?
Yeah.
And the great Tom Paxton was over, because he was actually doing a guest. And I had met Tom in London some years before when I was with RCA Records. Tom and I were under the same management company.
Okay.
And so we went to the National Concert Hall, and of course, in the great world of busking, no rehearsals or anything. John Sheehan on violin, Tom Paxton on six-string guitar, Finbar Fury on banjo, and I on 12-string guitar, and we backed Liam for his very last show.
Fantastic, fantastic.
Yeah, and it's something I'll never forget. We were playing, and it was like, I was kind of in my own world, making Liam sound great as he was.
Yeah.
And with the big 12-string, and John came over to me and he says, "Hey, Francis," he said, "just open your eyes, take a look around." He said, "We're living a bit of history." And I looked up and I saw there was everybody just standing up all around us in the National Concert Hall.
Yeah.
And I think everybody in the place knew something very special was happening, you know?
Yeah. And sure.
And what a band.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
think
absolutely.
About it. Liam Clancy, Tom Paxton, John Sheehan, Finbar Fury. I mean, what a band, like.
Incredible. Incredible. Have to say, I would have loved to be there that night, but anyway. And obviously touring with the Furies, because you toured with Finbar and the Furies all over the world. And there must be some stories out of that touring.
They did. I mean, like, it all kind of happened by accident. I mean, we knew each other from, you know, before I'd left Ireland. They were actually, I suppose, really realistic, one of the only bands I actually knew as friends, because during the Rose of Tralee Festival, the George, Paul and Eddie had a band called the Buskers going. They were working out of England, I think around Newcastle or Leeds or somewhere like that. And Finbar and Eddie had a two-piece going, which was a wonderful two-piece band. And then they decided to amalgamate the whole lot and call it the Furies and Davy Arter. And they were booked for the Rose of Tralee Festival for two nights, and Clutch were booked for two nights. So they had us on a Denny Street, the main street in the town.
Yeah.
And one of the nights, Clutch were on first and the Furies were on. And the next night the Furies were on and Clutch were on. But we became friends out of it. Hmm. And it was like, and it was funny because the day after when we finished, the guys were in Tralee and they were going to get paid at the festival office. We were going to get paid. So we all actually went to the office at the same time. We all got paid at the same time. And then we actually went busking together outside the office.
Right, okay.
I mean, talk about like, that was just to mark our connection together, you know. And then I didn't see them for years until it was in Hilversum at one of the big TV radio stations. It would be like the equivalent of RTE.
Yeah.
And I was in the canteen getting a bit of lunch. And at that stage, of course, I had the leather jeans, all the leather gear, cool and groovy, as they say. And next thing I heard, "Woo, woo, look at your man, look at your man." And then they go and shout out, you know, "Far from leather jeans, that fella was reared." You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, good.
So the connection was made again. You know, it was just brilliant.
As if it was the day before yesterday when you were outside busking, yeah.
Yeah, and then when I came back to live in Ireland, I got word that the Furies wanted to record Somewhere in Heaven, and they found out, or they knew I was living now in Dublin, and they asked to know would I come in and join them at the recording session. And of course, I was delighted to go in and play with them. And Keith Donald from Moving Hearts went in as well and played. And Jim O'Neill, that was with Radio 2 at the time, quite an accomplished piano player. And Jim came in, and we had the most wonderful afternoon in Wimble Lane studio. And then it was like for taxis going home. And then it was, we were over in O'Donoghue's, and I think it was Tomo or Detzer or one of the road crew were organizing the taxis. And, well, Francie, where are you getting a taxi to? And I said, where I was. And then Finbar said, well, hang on a second. I live very close to there. Maybe we'll get the same taxi out.
Yeah, yeah.
So then on the way out, we had like the pipes, the banjos, to get everything in the boot. So on the way out, we decided there's not much point in going all the way home. We might as well just stop off and say hello in Buglers, as it was a local pub with the two of us, and I, we'd never been there together.
Right.
So we got the taxi to drop us off there. And we arrived in the front door to the Means Bar, as they call us. And the first thing we heard when we went in was some guy shouting out, oh my God, look what the wind just blew in. So we were looking, who said that? And it was Kieran Brennan from Clannad.
Wow.
So, I mean, a whole new circle of friends started that night in this pub. And I wasn't long home at that stage. And and it was, you know, it wasn't long after that. I mean, I did a TV show with RTE, with Finbar, with the Furies and Davy Arthur. And then the lads asked me to go on tour in Britain with them, and I did. And then I was kind of happy that that was over. And then they said, come on, we're going to Australia, New Zealand, Tasmania for 9 weeks. You can't leave now. And I mean, we were becoming really good friends. So it was like, and then at the end of that tour, it was, we're off to America and Canada. And so it just went on. Do you know what I mean?
How long did you tour with them?
The what?
How long did you tour with them?
I toured with them for about a year and a half, 2 years, you know. And then kind of the band was, it was shaky at the time with between Finbar and the lads. It wasn't going great. So then, you know, I got back to what I should have been doing. And then Finbar, and we all kept in contact. And then a couple of months later, I think it was around 8 months, Finbar called me and said that he was after leaving the band. And, you know, he was obviously, it was huge in his life. You know, it's his family, his brothers, and
difficult.
And, you know, so, I mean, as I said, we were friends. So it was like, and then I never took sides in the band, whether it was with Finbar or whether it was with the three lads.
Yeah.
And the thing was that the first album that the brothers did, I ended up working on the production of that. And the first album that Finbar did on his own, I ended up working on the production of that, you know.
So, yeah, so, it was a good thing to stay neutral.
Well, when the lads used to ask, like, there's one final vote, there's four and five of us in the band, two are going this way, two are going that way, what's your decision, Francie? And I would just say, I know nothing, I come from Barcelona, now leave me alone. I used to play Manuel from Fawlty Towers. Just leave me out of the decisions, you know.
And Francie, tell me about your connection then with Ronnie Drew.
Ronnie and I became very close friends, and Ronnie was very good friends with Rory, wasn't he, Rory, as well? Do you remember Ronnie?
Ronnie used to always
he took a big, you know, kind of, I think when Rory got sick and my life just went upside down.
Yeah.
Ronnie was always there. He, you know, we met through going to a gig. I think it was really funny. We actually rehearsed, which is kind of mad if you think about it. But I think because we didn't know each other, we were trying to kind of, I suppose, impress each other that we rehearse and we do this the right way, you know.
Yeah.
So after the rehearsal and the sound check, we did the rehearsal in a hotel room, and I went off one direction and Ronnie went off another direction. And of course, we arrived up on stage. We were closing the show. And Ronnie said to me, he said, "Do you have the set list?" And I said, "No," I said, "I left it in the hotel room. Do you have it?" And he said, "I taught you, I don't have it either. I'm going like this." So little did we know that the audience were hearing everything that was going on and loving every second of it.
I'm sure.
And suddenly realizing it was going to become, Finbar was sitting over at the side with Mike Hanrahan from Stockton's Wing,
yeah,
who would be another good friend of ours. And and the lads were hearing the conversation going, "We're in for a classic here." Do you know what I mean? And it was, and it was a really good gig. And it was the start of Ronnie and I friendship that lasted up until he passed on. And of course we recorded together, which I'm really happy about. We recorded A Drop of Irish Rain together. And actually that was the only recording that Ronnie and Finbar ever did together.
Oh.
You know, which is a nice little bit of history
Absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And of course we got the message from Chris Christopherson on that he loved the song.
Is that right?
The only bittersweet thing of that was that Ronnie had passed on before we got the word from him and stuff, because that would have been something that would have meant a lot to Ronnie.
It would have, yeah. Yeah, most certainly. And,
you know, that one of the highwaymen kind of liked some of the outlaws from Ireland would have been kind of nice. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And Francie, I also want to talk to you because you're a founding member of the Christy Hennessy Festival. Is it going to be on this year?
We're absolutely hoping. We might obviously not be able to have the numbers and stuff, Kevin, that we had in the past. But, I mean, I got involved because Imro asked me. You know, I've been very much involved with new songwriters since I came to live in Ireland through the college,
yeah,
through the rock school and through. So it was a kind of... you know, it was a great opportunity to showcase up-and-coming songwriters and provide a platform for songwriters. So they basically gave me a carte blanche to kind of, you know, come up with an idea for a couple of days kind of thing. So I was able to kind of, over the years, refine it with kind of the Christy Hennessy Song Competition, which has been proven to be a great success because we're getting a lot of well-known contemporary songwriters from many different places coming into that each year. We've been able to, with Troubadour Club, we've been able to provide platforms for established artists mixed with up-and-coming artists. I was able to have workshops from songwriting to the business of music to vocal training and all this kind of, so I was able to kind of shape the weekend and the few days into something that would be of real benefit to artists that are coming, and then real enjoyment to people who just want to come and enjoy the whole weekend.
And because I read an article an interview you done a few months back where you said that, you know, coming into the music industry, you know, when you came into it and you got your first record deal, I think you signed a record deal in a car park and didn't even look at the contract.
With RCA Records, yeah.
Yeah. So it can obviously overwhelm you when you don't know anything about it. So I suppose you took all that experience and you can deliver that in the college.
Well, I mean, it was Keith Donald, actually, who and the Arts Council who approached me about it.
Yeah.
About the college. Just after I got back to live in, came to, back to live in Ireland, because I suppose of my experience and the hit records, etc., and, you know, and that I would have something from the world of songwriting to benefit, to be benefit to the up-and-coming artists. And, you know, not coming from an educational background, I kind of said, I'll go for a couple of weeks until you find somebody.
Yeah.
And then I kind of, Matt Kelligan from Moving Hearts was also the main coordinator there. So between the link with Keith and with Matt and Tommy Moore, the great bass player, and Hugh Buckley, of course, the great jazz guitarist. Suddenly there was Greg Boland. There was a great collection of professional musicians that were involved in this. And it was actually proved to be one of the first in Europe. I mean, we had Good Morning America coming over to Ballyfermot to film what was going on. I remember we had LIPA, which is the Liverpool Institute of Popular Arts, which is funded by the British government, and Paul McCartney. I mean, they came over to see exactly how we were started this whole program. And I mean, they were, I mean, because of their funding, of course, they were able to go way ahead of us, but we still were the ones with the original idea. We've had colleges from Germany, from Sweden, from Holland, and now we're affiliated with all these colleges. And, you know, and we've had some amazing artists come through the college.
Yeah, there's I think Damien Dempsey, Mundy, there's been a few.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can still remember, like, if you can imagine, like, Damien coming in when we met first, and it was like, you know, I mean, but when you're, like, when I say about songwriting and about, you know, how vulnerable songwriters are, well, I have great admiration, and I suppose I've been providing platforms for songwriters, is I have great admiration for somebody that will stand up on a stage or in a company or to their family or to their friends and say, this is something I wrote myself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're showing yourself at your strongest or your weakest.
Yeah.
And you're letting yourself very vulnerable, you know? And it's, you know, it's a huge stepping stone for somebody. And, you know, I mean, I've been through it and kind of so when I was in London with songwriters like Chris White and Russ Ballard, I mean, these guys were enormous and they are enormous songwriters. The amount of time and the amount of attention they gave me so as I could kind of learn my craft and develop my craft. Yeah. And Colin Blunstone, and I mean, if you can imagine this, you can imagine the sessions of what it was like. I was getting master classes from these guys without them even realizing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, basically, I just thought I can just pass this on. I mean, because there was no textbooks.
No.
I mean, the only way to be a professional songwriting coach in education is by having success. So, I mean, there was, you know, and there was no textbooks that could teach you that.
No.
And, you know, so, I mean, of course, you'd be trying to find somebody's influences, you know, to know where they're coming from. So it took Damien Dempsey, it was a while before he kind of opened. I mean, Damien was a boxer, you know. And I mean, so it took him a while to get the trust in me to be able to say, hey, you know, I write poetry.
Yeah.
I mean, when you imagine him going out into a boxing ring and they knowing that he's a poet,
yeah.
I mean, they would batter the living daylights out of him. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I'm fighting the poet next week. I mean, you know. Will he have his glasses on? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, and when he first started showing me like the lyrics he was writing, you know, and then I thought like, well, what are your influences? You know, what kind of music influences? You know, and he says, yeah, I'm influenced by Lou Kelly, Ronnie Drew, and Bob Marley. You know,
yeah.
And I'm thinking, what in the hell does Luke, Ronnie have a connection with Bob Marley?
Yeah.
Well, now I had to kind of start linking the lyrics, the musicality, the whole lot together. And you know, I mean, we had an incredible journey. And we're, you know, I suppose when I looked through my telephone book, really, you know, the thing started up after I got back to live in Ireland. And very much my friends are actually from people that I met through the college, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, and I've had people down to as special guests at the Christy Hennessy, like Monday came down. And I mean, that was a magic night, wasn't it, Ronnie? Yeah. You know, so Monday was special guest and he did a fabulous set. And of course, it gave us a chance to hang out together. And,
yeah,
you know, and I mean, Wallace Bird, Lisa O'Neill, you know,
fantastic. I mean,
at the moment, one of the hottest tickets around is Junior Brother. And
yeah,
of course, from the pop world, 2FM now are 100% behind Lucy Blue, you know. So, I mean, you know, it's been wonderful to be able to give back into the industry and, you know, and to be a little spoke in the new music in Ireland over the last couple of years, you know.
Absolutely. You're still teaching there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant.
I don't call myself a teacher, by the way, you know.
Okay.
Well, because I don't come from the Department of yes. Education. I come from the Ministry of Rock and Roll.
A great ministry to come from.
You know, so I mean, like, that's a very different world from the Department of Education, you know.
Yeah, the academic world.
I mean, I don't think Norma Foley would like to hear me say that at the moment, but that's fine, you know.
Yeah, that's what, absolutely, Francie, absolutely. The new album, Hidden Gems, I want to talk to you about. The Independent have said sublime, perfect radio play rock. Hot Press says it's an album with a difference. Talk to me about the album and how did the album Hidden Gems come together?
Well, I mean, when I got the first review, it came from Hot Press, and when I said that John Lennon would have been happy to have the opening song as part of his, I forget what words it was, I honestly had to sit down, Kevin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that was the kind of, and Finbar is playing on that, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a lot of big names on that album. You've Russ Ballard, you've Jim Rodford, you've Finbar, Tim as you mentioned, Jerry O'Connor.
I mean, Tim Rennicks.
Tim Rennicks, Pink Floyd. Yeah.
I mean, the Division Bell is possibly one of the greatest guitar albums of all time, you know, with Tim Rennick and Dave Gilmour together.
Yeah.
They just broke. It was just unbelievable what they created, you know. And of course, there's Christy Dignam is on the album. And,
yeah.
Jerry O'Connor, you know,
Banjo Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, there's some great players Banjo there, Jerry. You know. Jerry O'Connor, you know. Jerry. And the thing is, the album is still, like, was it last Friday? It was Rock On, which is a pretty mad song. And it was been getting plays in California, and, you know, so it's kind of like, and the journey is continuing on with that record. So
yeah.
It's really nice. You know, I'm very, very proud of it, actually, you know.
Yeah, fantastic.
And the reviews and stuff were astonishing on it, you know.
It's a fantastic album. I've been listening to it quite a bit myself. There's one song on it, Up Against the Wall, again. That's with Tim Rennick, I think, is on it, and Russ Ballard. And
yeah.
John Verity, is it?
That's the band Argent playing with me. That goes back to, I mean, like, playing with your heroes kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's actually, you know, if you were to put a name on that band, that was me with Argent.
Argent, yeah.
Well, that goes right back to where I began, you know.
Which is incredible.
And of course, there's a song in it called Smart Man Blues, which was recorded when I was 16. That's the final track on the album.
That's with your friend Casbah, isn't it?
And that was with Casbah and Liam Hartnett.
Yeah.
And that was recorded when we were kids in RTE, and and the audio was taken and it was mastered and it was put on as a bonus track on the Hidden Gems. And I think it kind of, it was quite, it's kind of nice that the band was actually done because we were only kids. We hadn't recorded. We didn't have a record history. I mean, my first records was with RCA Records in London.
Huge label.
It wasn't here in Ireland, and it wasn't with the band that I was a member of growing up when I was a kid. And so it's actually lovely that there is a documentation of what the band sounded like. And for like 15, 16 year olds, I mean, if you listen to it, we were pretty okay, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the podcast, we'll take a song from that album. As I said, it's a fantastic album. Have you any plans to go out touring, playing any shows or in the next?
Well, I mean, the thing is that, I mean, I think the world of touring is going to change somehow. I mean, my world of regards touring changed anyway some years ago with my family situation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'll be honest with you, what I miss is the weekends to go away somewhere and actually do a show and kind of bring the family with me. I mean, I haven't been out doing kind of tours for many, many years.
Yeah. But
I just been going away for a couple of days here, a couple of days there, which suits me perfect, you know.
A staycation, as they say.
Yeah, I mean, and we did that one as well. I mean, the thing is that for me to go back out playing, I mean, I have a kind of a dilemma. Do I go out and play what's on the Gems and what's on Staycation? I just got word last Thursday at lunchtime that Peace, Love and Rock and Roll that I recorded with David Richards from Queen is in the European Top 70.
Astonishing.
So it's like, you know, I mean, can I really go out for a weekend with the family and my 12-string guitar, my 6-string guitar, and people are expecting to hear this big production, you know. And of course, we've got more releases coming up pretty soon this year because
you're working on stuff.
Because of the success of the Hidden Gems, it was suggested that we should maybe take a look at the first album that I recorded. And the first album I recorded was, it had the hits To the Edge of Time and One Night in Amsterdam on.
Yeah.
But there was a mix of the album that it was very much the four-piece band in the studio and with the backing vocals of Smokey. Do you remember Smokey?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Living Next Door to Wellis.
Yeah, with Terry Utley. And Alan Silson from Smokey and John Verity, who was being part of my time with RCA and with Warners as well.
Yeah.
And so the original mixes were done by a guy called Jan Ristori from a band called Supertramp.
Supertramp, of course. Yeah.
And it was a really kind of rock, raw kind of four-piece band with big backing vocals. But when To the Edge of Time became a hit and we were booked to play the Palio Festival on, we were booked for the Sunday night and we were expected to have about 4,000 people, which would have been a huge amount of people at that time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the festivals weren't like what they are today, you know? And we were booked for the Sunday. I was thrilled. We were booked, I think it was around February. To the Edge of Time was released around April, I think it was, and the gig was in July, and the song, people liked it, and it was getting attention, and it was in the charts and everything else, and it was became a hit, and we ended up having 25,000 people come to see us that night. And it went out on French, Swiss and German TV, you know. So then the first album was remixed by David Richards from Queen.
Queen, yeah.
That's how we became friends. And David's photograph is up here behind me, and He was a great friend of Rory here as well. And but the first mixes were, as we would say in Kerry, gone west. Nobody was kind of, you couldn't even find them, you know.
Yeah.
There were some vinyl copies, but the hits were from David's mixes and that. So it was suggested we take a look at the original album. And I'll be honest with you, I couldn't remember any of the songs. I mean, it's, I knew To the Edge of Time, obviously, in Amsterdam, because I don't think I can't go really doing play anywhere without kind of being asked to play those songs,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then when I listened to the album, I thought, yeah, that's a good song. So suddenly I said, okay, we'll explore it more. So we started around the end of November, just after we finished the Christmas song, the Christmas night. And then once we finished that, we handed that over to the company. And then we started on the original album. And then we worked in January again on it. And then last Monday week, we handed it over to the mastering engineer. So
fantastic.
The album, so you're going to be the first to hear the title as well. I'd love to hear what you think of it. We're calling the album Another Night in Amsterdam.
That's fantastic. That's a brilliant
title. What do
you think? Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Another night,
It's not a new album, but it's a new way
to
listen to these songs, you know?
Yeah, I really like it.
So, and then we have a new version of One Night in Amsterdam that wouldn't have been heard on it because we played and we did other things with the version of One Night in Amsterdam. And we did another version of To the Edge of Time.
Brilliant.
And then as bonus tracks, we put on the Montreux mix, that's with David Richards. With the Queen connection, we put the bonus mix of To the Edge of Time and One Night in Amsterdam. So if somebody thinks, well, that version of Amsterdam, that's not the one that I loved, or you know, I used to listen to when I was a kid or whatever. So they're going on as bonus tracks. And then when I was in Mountain Studio, Queen Studio, in the 80s. At one of the sessions, David Bowie came in and booked David Richards to do some recording with him. And that led to Blah 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 album with Iggy Pop. And then it ended up David Richards working with Bowie. And then, but before those sessions finished, David, who became one of my best friends in my life, gave me a cassette of an extended mix of one of the songs called Don't Mess With My Heart. And it was not meant for release. It was just, he did it because I think he was kind of showing off how good he was with technology and with kind of these dance mixes, extended mixes, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
And I actually had the cassette here at home and we transferred it from cassette. And it was all perfectly clean. And of course, now with mastering and stuff. And it's a wonderful piece of history because for anybody who will take the time to listen to the extended mix of Don't Mess With My Heart, they will hear very much the template of Let's Dance that David worked on a couple of years later with the other David, Erdal Kazalski and Nile Rodgers in Mountain Studio where we recorded this particular track.
That is an extraordinary story.
So you've got us on that. I'm just kind of hoping that I might get to hear it, the mastered version of it this weekend.
Oh, that'll be cool.
You know, and there's a couple of songs on it that I'm really glad that I'm proud to have written. If I had never written anything else, I would be happy to say I've written some of the songs on that record. So that's a really nice surprise.
That's beautiful, yeah. It really is.
And it'll be interesting to hear, you know, from people that I think it's good enough, and that it's not just a nostalgia album. Are you with me?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and people are listening very different these days, and the songs are not available anywhere else. And I think a lot of people will get a shock at how good that four-piece band was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I got a shock when I listened to it.
Mm. So now that you've told me the title, which is a brilliant title, Another Night in Amsterdam, when should we expect to be able to get our hands on it, as they say?
Well, I'm hoping that it will be released sometime around the end of March, maybe.
Brilliant.
You know, and you were asking if I could suggest any song that for you to play at the end of the session. When we get a copy from the mastering engineer and it's signed off on, I will send you a pre-release copy, and you can play To the Edge of Time or Amsterdam or anything else you want before anybody else gets the ears.
Well, that's mind-blowing, Francie, and I really appreciate it. That's really fantastic, and thanks so much for that.
You know, well, once we sign off, I'll email you a copy of the link, and you can download the complete album.
That's really, really, I'm really grateful for that, and thanks. That means a lot. It means a lot. And look, I think on that note, we can end. Francie Conway, Rory Conway, the great Rory, the very important man in the room. Thanks a million, guys. It was an absolute pleasure to talk with you. And thanks for joining me on Ireland Talks podcast.
Well, thank you, Kevin, and continued success.
The great Francie and Rory Conway, and what a pleasure it was to chat with the two guys. Now, of course, true to Francie's word, he did send me that pre-released master copy of One Night in Amsterdam, and I'm delighted to be able to play it here on Ireland Talks podcast. I'm going to follow this directly with To the Edge of Time. Thanks once again to Francie and Rory. It was a pleasure. You've been listening to Ireland Talks podcast.
Streets are crowded when the lights go on. Some out there looking for romance for a while. The town is ready for whatever's your style. See me, I've got some things in mind. Look up some old friends haven't seen for a while. Tonight I'm ready and you're here with me. I'll show you loving as it used to be. One night in Amsterdam, all I need to help you understand. One night in Amsterdam, show you something just what I am. Do tell me this must be love. The streets I walk always sing a song. The town's for you and me and everyone. It took my heart and it stole my soul. The longing's there and I must go home. Tonight I'm ready and you're here with me. I'll show you love as it used to be. One night in Amsterdam, all I need to help you understand. One night in Amsterdam, show you something just what I am. Such a friend of mine. grieves my heart when I think on the time. The town was ours and it soon will be. Your memory's here for the world to see. One night in Amsterdam, all I need to help you understand. One night in Amsterdam, show you something just what I am. One night in Amsterdam, all I need to help you understand. One night in Amsterdam, show you something just what I am.
Isn't that absolutely cool? Brand new, remastered, To the Edge of Time from Francie Conway. And before that, title track of the album, One Night in Amsterdam. Thanks to Francie for joining me on Ireland Talks podcast. It was a real pleasure.
You can find the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. You can contact the podcast by email on studio@irelandtalkspodcast.ie. If you have a story you want to share with us, get in touch. studio@irelandtalkspodcast.ie.